Moving on, our next second speaker is today is Grace Agnew from Rutgers University Libraries, who will focus on these issues. Grace is the Associate University Librarian for Digital Library Systems at Rutgers University Libraries. She's authored or co-authored books, articles, and presentations on metadata, digital video, and digital rights management. And Grace will present Digitizing the Humanities, What You Need to Know to Digitize and Share Humanity Resources. Grace?
I'm going to apologize up front and say I came in on the red eye from California, where I was at an NSF site visit. So Tom has very nicely given me toothpicks to keep my eyelids open, but if I start to drift off in the middle, you'll understand why. I'm going to talk about digitizing the humanities. I'm going to talk about it in the framework of the work that we've been doing at the Rutgers University Libraries, because we've had to really look at all the issues with digitizing the humanities as we build an infrastructure for Rutgers University. And this infrastructure we're calling RUCORE, which stands for Rutgers Community Repository. It's important to realize with RUCORE, we're talking about a whole framework and suite of applications, indeed an entire cyber infrastructure for the Rutgers community. And I want to make sure that everybody realizes I don't do this alone. I'm going to put people on the spot and ask everyone that's been involved in this room in RUCORE development to stand up, because I know there's a bunch of you, so go ahead and stand up for me. Spares me having to remember names. Can't do that after a long flight. I also want to acknowledge that we've recently begun partnering with OIRT in this development. It's bigger than all of us, and so I'm very excited about having their partnership in that, and also with Skills. We have a lot of support from both Skills and OIRT in our development. So what is RUCORE? Well, it is a cyber infrastructure for the Rutgers community that would include, and well, it does include, an institutional repository which preserves, manages, and makes accessible research publications and primary source materials from Rutgers University faculty and collaborators. It also is an umbrella for how we provide guidance to all of you on issues with digital access, which include digitally preserved images, organizing and sharing resources, and copyright. And it also is a platform for publishing information via the web in an open source manner. So our objectives are, we want to provide seamless, perpetual access to digital collections. We've actually done that pretty successfully in the analog world. If you go into our special collections and university archives, we have stuff that's several hundred years old and in pretty good shape. The digital world is more of a trick, and that's something we're juggling a lot of balls figuring that out. Our goal is to have a broad information architecture to support multidisciplinary collections and services at Rutgers, and also to provide leadership and support to Rutgers faculty to increase the impact and usefulness of their research output, to help them with grants and with other digital initiatives. I'll just note about this site visit that I did in California. You know, what the NSF does is they asked me to participate. I've probably reviewed for or done a site visit for most of the large cyber infrastructure projects that the NSF is involved in. And my role is to represent the digital repository. This grant is a very large multi-institutional grant that was actually non-competitively awarded. So a very, very big deal. I think it's like $50 million. And their institutional repository is in no great shape. And of course, I was, you know, forced to say that. And the principal investigator took me aside and said, you know, in frustration, he said, you know, we're doing really good research here. This is not our job. And I said, well, not really sure what you want from me. The NSF says it is your job, but you do happen to have a library that's actually very good in the field, and so I put him in contact with the right people. But I want you to know, you know, it isn't easy, and we recognize that part of our role as a library is to help you guys with the management of the resources that you're creating. So why are we creating RUCORE now? Well, there's an expanding digital environment, as you're all aware of yourselves. I mean, everybody's a publisher. If you can get on the web, if you have access to any kind of web editor, you are now a publisher who's reaching millions of people. And part of our goal is we want to avoid information stovepipes at Rutgers. We also, the repository world has come a long way, and there are emerging technologies that actually create what's called a trusted repository architecture, which is an architecture that experienced digitizing initiatives or vetting will provide some sort of permanence, durability, and authenticity for access to information. So as these suite of standards and applications are coming together, you know, we're part of that movement, and, you know, we feel that the time is now right for saying that we can make a credible stab at managing digital information. I also will say granting agencies are requiring permanent, sustained access to research products. This is fairly new, and I hear a high level of frustration from expert researchers who are getting grants because this is new and this isn't really their area of expertise, but that doesn't stop the NSF from acquiring it. And this is also a natural extension of our role at the library. We also really do want to support digital publishing and dissemination by faculty. We feel very fortunate, very lucky to be one of the best research universities in the world, and we'd like to support you in your efforts to have a greater impact. We want to increase the impact of faculty scholarly publications and departments by enabling you to market your publications to potential graduate students, to potential faculty, and to granting agencies. So what are our focus areas? Well, a big focus area for us is preservation, and we actually are leaders in the digital preservation arena, particularly under our digital library architect, Lon Jams. This is question, can we say that digital information will be available in 200 years just as stable analog information is? We also want to focus on publishing, developing sustainable digital publishing models that incorporate publisher business rules such as peer review. We want to provide collections of value, and we want to support research and teaching. That's all we want to do, and then we want to go home. So what is a trusted repository architecture? And these are things you need to know if you're thinking about digitizing for the long term. Well, one question you want to ask is the digital object authentic? If somebody finds it via Google, are they finding the right thing? Are they finding the authentic piece of information? Can it be uniquely identified and retrieved, meaning you're not going to get a 404 file not found? And do you have adequate methods for discovering and reusing the resources? So what does authenticity mean? Well, basically, the definition that I like from Gladney and Bennett is that the digital document must be whole and undisturbed, and there must be provenance associated with it. So you know that if you really wanted the facsimile of the, you know, Adventures of Huckleberry Finn that Mark Twain marked up himself, that you're not actually getting a gold key comic version when you retrieve something off Google. You want to, the provenance tells you what you expected to get, you're getting. And we know that this digital provenance has been tied with the object and never left the object. In the analog space, what you do is you look at the object in hand and you compare it with a canonical historical version. That's because everything changes, nothing stays the same. And a good example is Venus de Milo. It is very possible, and I've actually seen it done, to digitally put the arms back on Venus de Milo. And it actually looks pretty cool, but that is not the canonical version of Venus de Milo. We accept Venus de Milo has no arms. That is the canonical version. In the digital space, what you're looking for is, what was the source artifact? It might be a born digital photograph, or it might be a photograph that's been sitting in your photograph album and you've digitized it. We look for fidelity to the source artifact, which is why we have pretty high standards for the dots per inch and, you know, resolution, color, space, et cetera, that's used to create a digital object. So you can ask that question, is it identical to the digital canonical master, true or false? And we owe a great debt of gratitude to the digital rights arena because the large companies that are out there worrying about people stealing their trademarks and stealing their images have done a bang-up job in developing software that will actually go out there and crawl the web and look for illegal reuses of their objects that we can then use that same software to really validate that we still have authentic resources. It needs to be accompanied by a true provenance statement. This person created it. They created it on this day. This is the resource you're looking for. And you also have to have proof, and the proof that we use in RUCore is a digital signature that verifies that the canonical object is unchanged. We also maintain a metadata, which is data about data, digital audit trail that documents provenance and any changes we might make to the object. So, durability is about preserving the digital culture. cultural heritage for future generations. And there are three methods that can address digital permanence. And I'll tell you up front, you never start a high-end digital project without asking yourself, how am I going to maintain and migrate these images over time? And there's three ways. You can preserve the digital mediation space, which is basically the hardware and software needed to access, manipulate, and display the resource. Everything from the operating system to the browser, 20 plugins that are required for manipulating that resource. You can also emulate the digital mediation space, and I've seen some emulators that work medium well, where people try to emulate a whole range of operating systems, plugins, etc., so you can continue to play back resources. The more standard way to do this is to re-encode the information in new formats before the old format becomes obsolete. The only way to do that is to combine with others and collaborate with others. It's a very dangerous space to get into on your own. So what are we doing? Well, some of the things we're doing is we already have the digital audit trails and versioning. We already have the signature and checksum creation and validation. We're working on behalf of the Fedora repository community on event logging and alerting for preservation services, which is basically sending a crawler out there all the time saying, have any signatures failed? Have any identifiers failed to be assigned? You know, any other issues we should be aware of? Can you heal these issues and then just let me know? Or do you have to let me know right away and let me heal them? Something else we're working on is there is a new standard, actually several standards, that will actually look at the header of digital files and validate that it's a well-formed digital file according to the standards that you set for that format, that it's 600 dots per inch, that it's using this color space, that it's got 24-bit or 36-bit color, etc. And we can use that in several ways. We can use that first to validate everything that comes into the repository automatically. Next, to run reports on, you know, what standards we're at and what we need to automatically migrate. And then to validate that the migration happens successfully. Can't do all of this manually. You've got to have large-scale applications that will do this for you. We also have a lot of metadata about each object that documents not just the provenance, technical characteristics, and history, but we have a really unique data model that actually looks at all types of events in the life cycle of a resource and documents each event because, you know, resources are like we are. They age, they get a little decrepit, they go out in the world, they're in exhibits, they do all kinds of things just as we do. And documenting each of those events keeps your data as living and real as the people that created them. There are complex rights issues. Right before I went to California for this site visit, I was in Sweden. This is from the Ice Hotel in Sweden. You know, it's my picture. I took it, but it's a picture of an ice sculpture that is copyrighted to the architect who created the ice sculpture. The minute something is fixed in physical format, it's copyrighted to the creator. So technically, I probably don't have the right to show you this photograph. It was already melting when I left, so I'm not too worried about it. But if this were, you know, the Venus de Milo or something, I might worry a bit more, although that copyright's expired. But this is just to say that copyright is very complex. I do a lot of copyright work in the moving image community. And I can tell you when you get into performers, into all the related rights that are such as the sync rights for the soundtracks that are available in a moving image, it's very complex what you can or cannot share on the web. One of the projects that we're very proud of is our New Jersey Digital Highway, and we have a lengthy section on copyright and a risk management plan for copyright there. If you think about it, everything you fix is copyrightable. I'm looking at this woman in the red jacket here, and she's writing notes. Well, she's just fixed those in physical form, so those are now copyrighted. And if the guy sitting next to her tries to take them, then he's in violation of copyright, and somebody at another table like Sharon can do a citizen's arrest. Actually, it's rarely, you know, recently they started adding, you know, penalties that are actually criminal to copyright, but mostly it's litigation. But what that meant for us in the New Jersey Digital Highway is we had a lot of pictures, sort of in 1940, old man sitting on a lawn chair. Well, who's got the copyright for that? You know, it actually is still copyrighted. What do we do about that? So one of the things we've added here is we have added a, we don't have a copyright for these four ladies here. But we have added a thing that encourages people to include with their personal photographs, with their documents, a deed of gift that says, you know, this is what this information is about, this is what this photograph album contains. You know, I'd like to make it not available via non-exclusive license to any museum, archive, et cetera, that wants to, you know, to digitize it and make it available for other generations. The non-exclusive license meaning you keep the masters, but let us have the digital artifacts. And you can also, you know, I note in this little essay that you can make it 50 years after your death or whatever if you have privacy concerns. All of you that are faculty, you need to be thinking about this. Everything you write, your class notes, your paper, graphs, et cetera, all of those are your papers. If you don't leave some statement behind, they are property that pass to your next of kin, and then people like us need to find those next of kin and get their permission. That's very time consuming and difficult. We're actually working, that's one of our areas of interest, and we're working on trying to automate that process at the libraries, but it's very time consuming and difficult, and it impacts your ability to have a long-range scholarly impact through your work. So I encourage you to visit the New Jersey Digital Highway and find that deed of gift and stick it with your papers. Another issue that's really important is having that one authentic copy, and partly that's enabled by having an identifier that never goes away, that's unique and never changes based on the changing, moving around of the file all over your servers. It's also an issue that we're getting lots and lots of repositories out there, and should everybody have a copy of everything someone wants to put in a repository, or should we all just be linking to the authentic copy? That's something that's starting to emerge as a discussion topic in the institutional repository. So let me talk about some of the things that we do for you to help you address some of these issues. We are working on the ArtiCore Community Repository. We are in test right now, and we will be available in September for anyone to use. Some of the things that you'll get from that are the fact that your resources will be accessible, and also they'll be preserved. We do support the New Jersey Digital Highway, which is a statewide cultural heritage repository. We also use a commercial software application, Luna Insight, primarily for commercial images that have copyright issues. We can restrict access at the course level, and because we do pull resources down appropriately, as we should, between semesters. We also recently completed the Women Artists Archives National Database, which is a directory of women artists' papers in repositories and archives and libraries around the country. And the Mike Moving Image Collections Portal, which we developed for the Library of Congress, which is a portal to the world's moving images. It's got about 500,000 moving image records in it now. Its uses hit 5 million, and we've got about 190,000 unique users every month, which kind of blows my mind. Something I'm very excited about that's coming, we hope, is NJVID, which will be a statewide video portal, which will basically serve all the digital video needs of the state of New Jersey. This will serve lectures on demand. It will serve preserved videos, with Rutgers Libraries doing leadership in preserving digital video and making them widely accessible. It will also serve commercial videos that we can license, such as like a whole range of PBS videos, so you no longer would have to go to the media center to get a video, you just access it on your computer. We've applied for a grant with OIRT, with William Patterson, with NJH, and we're very hopeful about getting this grant. So this is the ArtiCore Community Repository, a simple website. You can participate in it, you can get links to information about understanding cyber structure and the various tools we offer. This is our draft thing in test right now, depositing faculty contributions to ArtiCore. It's a very simple process. We do some preliminary copyright for you. First, we ask if you're the sole author or the co-author of a multi-author work. We also have a list of resources. We do ask you, if the work has already been deposited in another institutional repository, we're trying to exercise some leadership here. We don't want to copy a resource from somebody else's trusted repository, we'll just link to it. If this is a preprint, postprint, book, or chapter, we'll do some preliminary copyright for you and see if you have the right to share this. just some basic information you have to give us. We are looking at using a piece of software called Data Fountain that will supply this automatically. That will come over time. Our goal is to make this as intuitive and simple for you as possible. We're not out to make work for you. And then you can see one of the other things we offer that I think is very cool is a dynamic portal that will enable you to put on your, say, on your CV, on your web-based curriculum vitae, or on your departmental web page, you'll be able to say, search all or browse all the resources, all the publications that our faculty have created. And people will be able to do that. They'll be able to look at just the dissertations, just the preprints or postprints, et cetera. You'll be able to do the same for your own personal presentations, and this will be, these will always be available, these will always be current. So this is, instead of having to have that my publications attached to your CV, you'll be able to just have your personal portal and be dynamically updated. You'll be able to select, like a department could say, well, we really want to have one portal that shows everything we've done. We want to have another portal that just shows our dissertations. You'll be able to go through and make selections like that. And this is the page as it looks right now. You'll be able to put either top or bottom, you know, your header. It'll look like it's your page, but, you know, only if someone looks at the URL will they realize they're not on your page. We also give you statistics such as top 25 downloads and all your downloads and also any changes. We do also offer an open journal platform. We have 5 journals. This is the New Jersey Digital Highway. We do offer on the New Jersey Digital Highway all the guidance you need for digitizing your own collections in a standards-based manner. Very important if you apply for an NEH grant. This is Luna, and this is Juan. And this is Mike. Okay, so we've been busy. So I think I have about 2 minutes. Does anyone have any questions for me? Yes.
Are there linked plans for CHI?
Yes. We actually are working with OIRT, that is, on our development. We want to use Sakai both for being able to pull resources into classes, but also we're very excited about a collaboration platform using the whole collaboration aspect of Sakai. Ultimately, what we'd like is when you're ready to put something in the repository, you know, save to repository. We'd like to make it that simple and trivial for you. That's probably a couple years down the road, but absolutely we're going to be integrating with Sakai.
Other questions?
Yes.
No questions?
You're talking about the copyright issue. Have you been thinking why or the reason why the university library does not encourage faculty to use basic comments licensing?
Well, we actually do on our copyright page talk about Creative Commons. We actually use it in other projects. We use a Creative Commons license in the New Jersey Digital Highway. We use a Creative Commons license in MIPE, in the Moving Image Collections. So you actually will find information about Creative Commons. The real issue is that in most cases you've already published the information or you're getting ready to submit it to journals or books. And so Creative Commons doesn't really apply. You've got a contract that supersedes anything you might do with Creative Commons. So for faculty, it tends to be a bit more complex. There are several databases. One's called Sherpa, I'm forgetting the name of the other, that do tell you what the policies are of the different publications for letting you redeposit in an institutional repository. There also is, Creative Commons does give guidance on how to get your a non-exclusive license back from publishers if that wasn't part of your license. And Spark has has an addendum. The Spark community has an addendum that you can attach to any licenses that you sign for publishing an article to say, I want this non-exclusive right. You know, and in humanities, I know books tend to be more of an issue than articles. Well, books go out of print quickly, and there goes your impact. So it's really important once a book goes out of print that your impact doesn't diminish, but that it then becomes available in digital form. So when you reach those diminishing returns of you're getting $5 every 3 months in royalties, it's time to put it in a repository. We actually provide a lot of guidance on our website, and I think we'll be offering a lot of proactive guidance on helping you manage your license better.
Yes. Questions in Newark or Camden?
Thank you very much. There are no questions in Camden.
I encourage you as well to go back to our exhibit on Articore and on Luna, and if you have any further questions, please leave cards with us and we'll get back in touch with you. Thank you.